Okay, so we're still talking about logos, which is your bread and butter, isn't it? If that's the word, you know that phrase.
Yeah.
So as a kind of fledgling collector, I remember excitedly getting the TM song, which I thought was great, and then excitedly getting the Jam song some years later, and being struck by the fact that actually when I listened back to the TM song, it didn't use the station logos at all, whereas the Jam song makes a big point of not just using the logos, but using the combinations of voices that would have been used then. And it implies that there are potentially just dozens and dozens, or perhaps hundreds and hundreds of logos. So I don't know where this question's going, apart from wanting to explore.
Well, yeah, I mean, we, in making the Jam song, of course I was, I mean, I too enjoyed the TM song when it came out. And when we did the Jam song, which was in a way our answer to it, although it was, you know, 15 years later. Or,
yeah.
Well, when did that come out? 73, I think.
Yeah, it was 15 years. Yeah.
72 or 3. So, you know, over a decade had passed. You know, yeah, I mean, the whole idea was to sing each station with the right logo and with the right vocal group, and to have it rhyme, which is why it was so difficult to do, and to work in, you know, okay, well, here's this big long list of all of our clients. We don't have room for all of them, but of course we have to mention this one, this one, this one, and this one, and then, well, let's use this one because it rhymes, you know, because even the letters rhyme. You know, if you listen closely to the sequence there, like, you know, it's, and then, you know, the resulting putting all those logos together in a row creates a big long melody, so it had to be something palatable too. So we kept switching stations around and the order around to get it to flow nicely. It was a very big project done almost exclusively for fun. I mean, yes, it was an ad. Yes, it was promotional. Yes, we did send out copies of it and all that. But, you know.
But you were making it, I would have thought, knowing when it was done, at a time when you were already incredibly busy with loads and loads of work. So there must have been moments when you thought, quite why have we decided to do this at this point?
I know exactly why we decided to do it. It was a snapshot in time. Because I looked around and I said, okay, we are doing everybody's jingles, pretty much. It was just astounding to me. The stations, the shows, the everything that we were doing. And I, you know, you just inherently know this isn't going to last forever. Either somebody else is going to come along, or things are going to change, or who knows what. But I said, right now, I mean, this is as busy as we're ever going to be, and it's amazing. And you know, virtually, you know, every station that I thought it would be incredibly fun to be on or work for when we started, we had achieved that.
Yeah.
And I said, well, we need to commemorate this or take a picture of it in sound, if you will, or whatever. And also, I knew that in a few months' time that Bruce Upchurch, who was on staff with us and had been for, I think, 5 years, something like that, a very talented writer, arranger, singer, guitar player guy, you know, I knew that he was going to be moving out of town, and I wanted to work with him on this. So that kind of forced the timing a little bit because, well, you know, I know he's going to be leaving in a little while, so let's get this done while he's here because I wanted him to be part of it.
So having decided here's a good idea, what it must be a case, mustn't it, that jingle has to start with the lyrics because the track has to follow from that. So what was that? You sat down or Bruce sat down or someone sat down and started mapping out what the lyrics were?
I did the lyrics. I wrote them on a yellow legal pad, which I still have somewhere.
So just like the one that had traveled to Chicago for the class action.
Probably the same pad. Bruce was waiting for the lyrics.
So does that mean you put those lyrics together not knowing what the well, I mean, you know, what, in one sense, you know what some of the melody is going to be because it is those logos, isn't it? But yeah. you don't know what the actual kind of tune is going to be. Or?
Well, in the parts of the song that are not the call letters, you know, I wrote the lyrics, and Bruce set them to music. So he wrote the tune with the lyrics I had given him. But in doing that, you know, you try to write lyrics which meter out nicely, as opposed to a bunch of random words or, you know, haiku or something. I mean, it's when I write the lyrics, you know, I know that there's a meter to them that makes sense, even if I don't know exactly which notes the writer is going to choose to set them to. You know, I know it's a little poem. I know it's a little da 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 da. Da 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 da. You know, not that simple.
There's a friend I know called Radio.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, and all the little internal rhymes, you know, a maze of W's and K's, but it's all, you know, otherwise your arranger or your composer doesn't have a chance because if you give them just total random sentences like we get from clients quite frequently. They're just not musical, so that's part of the thing. And then, as far as the bits that do have call letters, which are logos, obviously I knew how that would go because I knew all the logos. So I tried my best to arrange them in an order that was at least workable. I'm sure we made a few changes on it as we progressed, and I think there were. I think there were more lyrics than we actually used. I think I wrote more than we used because we figured out, okay, you know, this thing's already 5 minutes long. Yeah, that's too much. So I think there are some lost verses that never got.
Were there some radio stations which felt kind of left out or offended and contacted you saying we were disappointed we weren't included? Or did they all take it in the spirit of it just being a celebration of radio?
I can only remember one that was actually mad or insulted that they weren't in it. And I tried to point out to them that at the time we made it, they hadn't bought anything yet. But see, of course, they had since then. So between the time we made the jam song and the time we sent it out, we had done jingles for them. But it was already done, and they never did understand that. And so that was kind of unfortunate. But for the most part, people just loved it and thought it was this cool thing. And, you know, like it says on our CD, you know, we never intended it to be aired. We just thought it would be a promotional thing and people would listen to it and maybe save it, maybe not, maybe pass it around. You know, the pre-internet version of something going viral was people making dubs for each other and sending them around.
Yes.
But some stations did play it.
Yeah.
Including Radio 4, believe it or not.
Did they?
Because when I was over one time, they had me as a guest on a talk show called Midweek with Libby Purvis.
Yes. Yeah, she lives in Suffolk, where I live.
Really?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was one of three or four guests, and so it wasn't like the whole show was about jingles, but part of it was. I wish she had asked me some of the questions you had because they would have been a little more interesting, perhaps. But they did at the end of the show end it with a good bit of the jam song, so it did actually get played on Radio 4.
Oh, great! Now this, we'll see if this is an interesting question or not. See if I can formulate it. If you're writing a top of the hour cut like that, great WABC cut 121 or whatever it is, the Merriman one, but any of those big top of the hour cuts or New York 97 song, what they're doing is they're leading up to something at the end, which is going to usually be the name of the station and the city. The thing about the jam song that strikes me is that it finishes anticlimactically. So, do you know what I mean? It doesn't lead up to some great big, so we are jam. It suddenly has to stop in order that you can then get your galactical stuff. So that must have been part of the idea early on, was it? That it was going to lead to this sense of jam one day dominating the universe?
Well, yeah, I mean, the lyrics obviously went off in that direction. Here is an extreme bit of useless trivia about the Jam song. There's one, my only regret about it. It's perfect in every way except for this one thing. There's one wrong word in it.
We're just going to pause there, just to let people think if they can predict what it is, right? Okay. That's the teacher in me,
yes,
right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's very inconsequential and makes no difference at all. It just matters to me. And it's at the end where it says, chances are one day you'll hear a sound while you're tuning around. And what they sang was coming from the Milky Way. And it was supposed to be from beyond the Milky Way, because we're already in the Milky Way. And he's coming from Andromeda, because the legal ID is Zorp Furble Andromeda, which is a different galaxy, right? So it's wrong to say it's coming from the Milky Way and then have this station in Andromeda coming through. It was supposed to say from beyond the Milky Way, and the words got copied wrong, and I didn't catch it.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not going to listen to it again now. It's a flawed
it's
product.
It's ruined, isn't it? It's ruined. But when I wrote that, at the time I wrote those lyrics, I knew, okay, we would do some funny mock air check at the end of some galactic thing. I didn't know exactly how it would sound or who was going to do it or what we'd put there. And so, you know, the actual track itself of the song just ends on this sustained note that we knew could fade under my silly pretend air check that we made.
And then the Zork verbal, the kind of alien babble stuff. How was that done?
Okay, now just to be correct, because everyone gets this wrong. Zorp,
that's right. Yeah.
Furble. Zorp Furble, which everybody thinks is the name of the jock, was intended to be the name of the station. Hence the legal ID, Zorp Furble Andromeda. I can't believe we're actually having this discussion.
Yes.
as far as the alien talk at the end, our friend Steve White, who is a writer of words and had worked with us on a lot of projects at that point, doing commercials and things like that. And, I asked him to be the goofy alien DJ because it was typecasting. And so what he did was he turned on some radio station and wrote down what the typical kind of thing a jock would say in English, obviously. You know, hi, it's me, and it's 12:30, coming up another 5 minutes of music with, you know, whatever it was. And he wrote it down. And then he pretty much translated it into nonsense syllables that kept that same rhythmic pattern. And he typed it up on a sheet, which I still have.
This was scripted then?
Oh, yeah. And so he was, he wrote himself a script so that the rhythm of the patter would sound familiar, because it was taken from a real station's stuff. And what we were trying to show there in very quick succession was a top-of-the-hour jingle that sounded just like anything on Earth, and then the call-in-to-win touch tones playing the Zorp Furble logo, which are hidden back in there. And then the call-in-to-win winner who heard the touch tones and... and he asks the question, and of course the answer has to be Zorp Furble. So, she says Zorp Furble, and she's the big winner. And
who was she?
She was his wife, Kathy. And basically, the whole idea was just to show that even in an alien civilization, radio is going to sound the same and have jingles in it. That was the idea.
Yeah, which is half true, isn't it? Radio does sound the same; it just doesn't always have jingles in it.
And the self-fulfilling prophecy of all that, and you know, this is stretching it just a little bit, but and it's on the webpage too. But I still get a kick out of this that when XM satellite radio began. That's radio being beamed down from a geosynchronous satellite 22,000 miles above Earth. And, you know, they used to, in their early days, make a big deal about it being space age and kind of tongue in cheek, you know, but satellite and coming from space and all this stuff. So they actually made a promo that used part of the Jam song in it. And, you know, I heard it in the car, and I said, okay, this is coming from space. So not only was Jam coming from space, the Jam song was coming from space. And, you know, on the XM receivers, you know, it shows you the text of what channel you've tuned or what song you're hearing or what the artist is, whatever you punch up. And I called them up and I said, I don't really mind you using that, but it needs to say Jam song on the display when the promo is playing. And they said, okay, so they changed it. So I actually did have the experience of listening to XM6, which was the 60s channel, and hearing this promo and seeing Jam song on my display coming from technically not outer space, but we'll stretch it a little bit.
Can we just ask a couple more things about the Jam song? Whatever. This question started with logos, actually, which I will just get back to probably
logos
at the end. Yeah,
I know nothing about.
So logos. So you get the lyrics on your yellow pad, and Bruce Upchurch, and you work on the whole thing, and then, as it says on the making of a custom jingle, it was time to go into the studio. That must have been an extraordinary business, because you've got this 5-minute track or something, and you do exactly the same thing, building it layer by layer. What kind of time frame is that over?
Well, I mean, the Jam song being that long and being a song, you know, was done. Those sessions had a little bit of a different feel to it than a normal jingle session where you're doing 20 short things in once. And this was a session to do one long thing. So it was a little more like a record session in a way. But, you know, instead of having 20 little things to worry about and having to worry about keeping the client happy and all and checking the stopwatch to see if it was the right length, you know, we were the client. We were our own client. We didn't have to make anybody happy but ourselves, which was very liberating and fun and nice. So, you know, it didn't take that much longer to record the track than it would have taken to record any other track. But because we had all those different singers and vocal groups and vocal combinations, you couldn't do all that in a day. There were numerous sessions spread around to get all those pieces done. So the whole recording process, start to finish, as I remember, took about 3 weeks. And you know, and that was the only thing we were doing. I don't mean that's the only thing we did for 3 weeks, but that was the only custom thing we were doing for 3 weeks, was working on that.
You cleared studio time in order to get the track put down. So does that mean that the rhythm section have to do all of that rhythm section for that track in one take, ultimately?
Yeah.
Because whilst you can work in bits on the vocals, can't you? You can't do that on the track, if I understand it.
You can, and sometimes we do, but it's better to have one solid performance that's good from front to back. Because if you punch in other words, if you go into record somewhere in the midst of it, oftentimes, you know, unless there's a hole, meaning, you know, unless there's a rest where everybody's silent for a beat or two, which gives you an obvious place to punch in. But, you know, otherwise, you know, a drummer is not going to play exactly precisely the same thing every time. Maybe the first time through he hits a cymbal here and the second time through he doesn't, or maybe he plays a little harder or softer. Yeah. It's not unlike with machines, which will play it the exact same way every time because you've programmed it to.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you punch in during a live track, something for a just brief moment isn't going to match. And now in the digital age, it's a little easier to cover that because you can play with the punch-in point. If I'd punched in a beat later, then I'd catch this cymbal. You can do it a lot easier now. But back in analog tape days, every track had to go into record at the same time, and you'd notice it. So, it was played front to back.
And because you had those different logos for different stations with the right combination of singers, presumably that means that for some bits of it, there was a combination of singers just needed for kind of 3 seconds because they were the ones just on one particular set of call letters or something.
Yeah. Now, of course, you know, we're not totally silly, so we tried to coordinate that with other things we had for those people to do.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we had a session with this particular group of five, and while you're here, you're the five I need for logo 1 and 17 and 38 on this song. So it was actually made like a big puzzle. You know, there were little pieces of it that were finished, and then there was a gap while we waited to fill that in with the right singers, and then so keeping track of the roadmap of it was one of the biggest challenges, just to make sure we actually did get all the bits and didn't come to mix it and realize, oh, we never sang the WMGK part.
Last question on it. When it was finished, did you do something? I know it gets sent out, but did you gather everyone together and say, right, here it is, let's have the inaugural presentation of it to the staff?
I don't remember there being a big formal presentation of it. I'm sure we dragged everybody into the control room and played it for them at one point or another during the day. You know, everybody liked it. We did have a group presentation of the 20th anniversary CD when it was done. We did have the entire staff, which was a significant number of people, in this room. And I gave a little talk, and we played the disc one, which is the history of it, for everybody all at once. But the jam song, I don't know, I just, you know, as people would come in or as people would poke their head into the control and say, hey, come here, listen to this. So it was kind of a relief to get it finished, because it was a lot of work, and I spent a ton of time, as you might imagine, mixing it.
But fantastic. Thank you.